So we'll get back to the first half of the program. This will now be the second half of broadcast number 846. And then we'll take calls, and then you can share your part, your participation, and be on the air. Don't be bashful if you haven't done it before. Now, this Glenn Suham, who worked with the National Security Council and Oliver North and Adnan Khashoggi in the Eastern Intelligence Branch that provided weapons for the Contras, he worked for that company that I referred to, OPIC. And one of the hot points now is investigation of the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. That's what it is, OPIC, or the letters, Overseas Private Investment Corporation. And I mentioned before, I had on World Watchers 830 back in September, that a federal investigation was being made of OPIC because 375,000 and then 500,000 were given down to John Hall in Costa Rica, taken there by Robert Owen, being a liaison for the NSC. We don't know what he did with that money or who he transferred it to or if it was used to buy drugs. It was allegedly to start a business, but his connections are with the intelligence community, and OPIC was giving him a nice round figure of $875,000, which is being investigated at the present time. And one of the workers from OPIC was at John Hall's ranch, and a lawyer went down and a worker, and one of them dropped dead in Costa Rica and never made it back home. So that was another victim to the OPIC scandal, Glenn Suham working for the agency. Also, Jonathan Quitney wrote an article about the John Hall connections in Costa Rica, Wall Street Journal, September 30th, 1987, and described the agency and the mortgages on Hill's property, that there was no collateral for such a loan, it hadn't been registered, that OPIC's lawyer absconded with the registration fees. He later, in quotes, committed suicide, and the Senate subcommittee will question OPIC evidently later on. I don't think they've done it yet. Now, that also is the same company that was doing the insurance for the pipeline that Ed Meese is involved in. The San Francisco Examiner had a story February the 15th, new views on memo regarding Meese. This is the pipeline that was to be built for Iraq. Another headline, NSC ran secret effort on pipeline. That's the San Jose Mercury, February the 4th. But the article from the Los Angeles papers and San Francisco Examiner, in sort of the headline before the article begins, said, source calls language clearly conspiratorial. Now, the word conspiratorial is a new word to see referring to Ed Meese's actions or the pipeline or the National Security Council. Years ago, for maybe 15 of my 17 years on the air, people referred to me as a conspiracy theorist. Now they come out and talk about conspiracies in Edwin Meese and letters and memos that are conspiratorial, and another story in the Chronicle, bombshell memo to Meese, and again the word conspiratorial is used. The language is unanimously considered by the persons who read it, the letter conspiratorial. And these were arrangements and payments loaded with potentially damaging inferences in the memos regarding building the pipeline. And the company that was to insure the pipeline was the same OPIC that was giving this $875,000 to John Hall in Costa Rica and working with Glenn Suham. He was an agent for them also. And the story about this pipeline that again brings on the tone of the secret team that was described at the conclusion of the Iran-Contra hearings suggests and says that the activities of building the pipeline for Iraq were limited between Edwin Meese and Mr. Wallach, Meese's close friend and attorney, Robert Wallach, and Mr. Rappaport, the financier, Bruce Rappaport from Switzerland, and Robert McFarlane. And the orders were that it was to be compartmentalized, that the CIA and the State Department weren't even to know about the pipeline project. The OPIC would put together, and the State Department was specifically not informed of the operation, nor was the CIA. The activities were on the behalf of Edwin Meese, his close friend and attorney, E. Robert Wallach, a long friend, Wallach working with the Bechtel Corporation, and Bruce Rappaport. Now, I came across an article this week that Bruce Rappaport, the mysterious banker for OPIC, happens to have an insurance agency that represents, oversees all of the Soviet Union Navy, if you can dig that one. So these secret activities are going on without the CIA or State Department knowing it, being held in the financial accounts of Mr. Rappaport in charge of the overseas Soviet Union Navy. And goodness knows what kind of deals or compromises were taking place. And the meetings were happening in Washington in June 1985 in the White House, the NSC section of the White House. These people were meeting. And one day after their meetings, they're, according to the book on the chronology, Robert McFarlane then leaves, or 2 days later, to go to Iran and is making deals to send arms to Iran. He's sitting in the White House in the NSC building, deciding to build pipelines for Iraq, and the next day he's off with Ollie North to Iran. He is helping the oil from one country, and he is promising arms to Iran, the other country. Somehow they can't seem to make peace over the table or over the board, but they have to have these secret dealings where they're undermining each other. Now, as far as Mr. Glenn Suham is concerned and the ships that he had that were sent down to Panama that Noriega had, I mentioned quickly last week, and I want to repeat again because of the links of the late Suham and with Noriega's new problems, an article that was in the New York Times, November the 19th, 1987, called "Panamanian Reportedly Offered Sabotage for North's National Security Council." Panamanian General Manuel Antonio Noriega offered to assist Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, the White House aide, with sabotage or to do assassinations for the United States. North accepted the sabotage offer on the instructions of Rear Admiral John Poindexter, but Poindexter told North, "Don't get too involved. The U.S. government is prohibited by executive order of planning or conducting plans and assassinations." However, Poindexter apparently decided to run the sabotage operations outside normal government channels, so he ordered North to pay for sabotage out of the money controlled by the Enterprise, which held profits from the Iran arms sales. Now, the Enterprise kept the money that Khashoggi was supposed to be paid back. It went into that account, which Suham shared the same bank and which the Enterprise Stanford Technology Training Group used. And as soon as Suham was killed in September of 86, Thomas Kleins, a member of this group, is hired by the National Security, begins to work for the government officially. And so the money came out of places like Lake Resources, banks in common with the late Suham, and there was an agreement about assassinations and the way to get around whatever slim laws were made by Ronald Reagan or William Casey. And so assassination was one of their projects, and one of the members on the team, Kleins, was hired by the White House right after Suham was murdered. Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins were in Chile when Salvador Allende was murdered. They were good at that. They were in Saigon at the time of the Phoenix Program, where 30 or 40,000 people were murdered, but they were two CIA agents in Chile at the time that government was overthrown. Now, February 18th, 1988, the Boston Globe had a story. Casey derailed any ban on killings. This is the testimony of Mark M. Richard, Deputy Assistant Attorney General, and the House Committee is still working on the Iran-Contra story. And he said William Casey, a CIA director, scrapped a proposal that was made in 1984 that would be a crime for people in the United States to plot the murder of individuals in foreign countries. And Mr. Richards was disturbed by the proposal, the way it was being handled or rewritten. He said, "My recollection is that William Casey wanted to be assured that this proposal could not reach authorized conduct of the agency, that they would be able to kill and the CIA's hands wouldn't be tied. Federal employees, including the CIA, had originally been prohibited from taking part in foreign assassinations in 1981. However, Reagan's order didn't have criminal sanctions, and so, therefore, you could kill agents of their own that they worked with overseas." And the Associate Attorney General Lowell Jensen assured William Casey that the proposal to put a ban on killings, assassinations, wouldn't happen, wouldn't affect any acts that had been authorized by the National Security Council, the government. And shortly after that, Associate Attorney General Lowell Jensen was made a judge, a federal judge in San Francisco, And he's holding up a very important case. I think it's regarding Mr. Maselli, a top Nazi of the Nazi junta that were responsible for 20 or 30,000 people being killed in Argentina. And he's holding up the case of the trial that's supposed to take place in this country from people whose parents died or family died at the death squads in Argentina. And Lowell Jensen is sitting on that case in San Francisco. It'll probably get the same treatment that the Presidio Daycare Center got. So Jensen was in on assuring William Casey on the legality of murder, so I don't believe it was very impossible to get rid of Glenn Suhan because of his being touching all these various bases and being replaced by Thomas Kleins and the paperwork, the legality of the assassinations, and Noriega offering to do assassinations. That doesn't mean he leaves Panama and takes a trip to Paris. It means that there's a lot of Panamanians that can get to Paris and gun down Mr. Suhan. The two people that gunned him down have never been found. Now, just the first of the year, the first broadcast in January of 88 on tape 840, I had a tongue-in-cheek account of Mr. Attorney General Edwin Meese making a quick trip to Paris, France, to pick up 9 paintings of Adnan Khashoggi that belonged to the Marcoses that Corazon Aquino wants back in the Philippines. I know that Southby and the various art galleries don't have attorney generals flying around picking up those paintings. There's ways to ship those with federal marshals and so forth. The artwork worth many, many millions more is transported. And the attorney general slipped off real quietly and came back fast the first day of this year to go to Paris to arrange with Mr. Adnan Khashoggi to pick up 9 paintings. There were 38 altogether, so they were giving him 9 to send home. That means he can make a lot of trips to Paris to pick up paintings, and then he can be doing his bag work or his money arranging or payoffs. The attorney general made this quick trip to Paris. It was a quick trick. That's what I really meant to say, and a tricky trip, and then allegedly brought home 9 pictures, and I asked at the time about what kind of monkey business was this. And sure, the Philippines want their pictures. He didn't bring home as many as he was supposed to, but I thought he was on some kind of a deal. And with Mr. Khashoggi being close to Suhan, Khashoggi wanting his money and asking for it 2 days after Suhan was dead, Suhan handling a ton of money for the enterprise that belonged to Adnan Khashoggi, and there was Khashoggi in and out of Paris all the time, and Suhan thinking he had tons of money, millions of dollars that really weren't his, were to be paid back to Khashoggi. He's a friend of Khashoggi's. And all of a sudden, our attorney general is flying to Paris to bring home these pictures. And all you have to do is think about what was going on in Paris when he flew there. The OPIC office was being investigated with Meese and the pipeline starting the first of this year. The OPIC funding of John Hall's ranch with his hunks of money, $875,000, was being investigated, is being investigated in Washington. The French police are still working on the case of the Glenn Suhan murder because they found papers of the State Department there. Mr. Khashoggi, his associate, is crying for his $10 million that he doesn't have that was put into the lake resources. And Mr. Suhan's Swiss account was in the same branch as lake resources and the arms and the weapons going down to the Contras from Poland and Eastern Europe came through Lake Resources, Udall, that dummy front. And so all these investigations are going on by various groups of Congress, various law enforcement people, and they're beginning to talk about the drugs of Noriega and the investigation of drugs. And, of course, that goes right back to the Contras. So with all of this just coming to a head by January the 1st, 1988, this is only February, and I've been collecting articles on these stories. As the investigations were going, I can see and just practically hear the conversation that Ed Meese was having in Paris. I suspected something very fishy about that trip when he went, but now when I put all the dates together and what was coming down at the time, I really wonder how the man can sleep at night. And last week I just quoted a few sentences of a Mr. Milan Rodriguez who was testifying on C-SPAN. It was played back, the Senate hearings on drug connections of Noriega. And the man who puts him down in the news media, in the Washington Post, the Miami Herald, is U.S. Attorney Leon Kellner. He says he doesn't trust Rodriguez. Rodriguez wanted to mention George Bush's connections. Again, at the hearings, as I say, and John Kerry cut it off. He has talked before and given interviews on the Mr. Gomez-Rodriguez, a man with the same names, one's an alias, who has access to George Bush's office and was there twice. And the drug enforcement agents, some believe Mr. Rodriguez's story. A lot believe that he's absolutely truthful. He worked with the Central Intelligence Agency. He funded the original Bay of Pigs. He learned out the funding through the Bay of Pigs operators. He launders money for drug smugglers. He's an accountant in Miami. But the man who puts him down the most in the printed media is this prosecutor, Kellner, from Miami, who said that Million never told his staff about these allegations, that his office has no documentary evidence, that Milan was a money launderer. Well, Milan Rodriguez testified that when the DEA came into his office, they ripped out the whole computer and destroyed all the evidence. And you can see why in Miami they would be doing that. And he said there was no evidence that he worked for Medellin Drug Cartel. Well, you're not a card-carrying member of the Medellin Drug Cartel. But the U.S. Attorney Leon Kellner from Miami, who's putting down Rodriguez, who sounds perfectly believable and has horrendous stories to tell, that's the same Kellner that was stopping the drug investigations when the Christic Institute filed their suit and when they went into Hassenfuss's landing and the arms and weapons to Iran and down to the Contras. The drug trafficking, the gun running came out in many, many articles. And the same man, Mr. Kellner, the U.S. attorney, had stopped the investigation in Miami on the basis of it's too political. He saw Oliver North's name on those papers, and he stopped the investigations. And there were large articles this past week, again, the San Jose Mercury and Boston Globe, how the probe of the North Network was diverted. And it tells about the U.S. attorney, Mr. Kellner, the office of Kellner and the Justice Department and the other agencies who blocked the probe, that Kellner reversed the recommendations of the FBI and the assistant U.S. attorney that the case could go to a federal grand jury, and he did so without informing anybody doing the investigations. And there were other persons, U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Feldman and an FBI agent, Kevin Currier, who said that their recommendations for the grand jury were being stopped by Kellner. And Kellner stopped the investigations because he met personally with Edwin Meese and Oliver North, and he was told this was political. And an agent from the Central Intelligence Agency leaked to members of North's secret network the information that was coming about, as the one FBI agent and one attorney. Mr. Feldman went to Costa Rica, and there were people taking the notes, a mole inside the offices, of course, of Senator John Kerry. And they were tipped off of what was happening in the investigations. And Kellner was the very person who was stopping those investigations until they couldn't be stopped any longer. And the whole Oliver North network could have been exposed as soon as the Christic Institute filed their case. And it was this man who now puts down Mr. Rodriguez, who obviously is protecting George Bush and George Bush's drug running activities as well as anything else, U.S. Attorney Kellner. So watch Ronald Reagan make him a federal judge in Miami shortly, because he's been keeping his fingers in the dikes and they're getting awfully soggy. Another large articles in the Miami Herald and the L.A. Times, February the 13th, titled U.S. Aides Link Honduran Military Chief and Drug Traffic. And this says Honduras, the powerful military General Humberto Regaldo Hernandez, is suspected of protecting Colombia drug traffickers and using his country for transshipping cocaine into the United States. He's the head of a Honduran army force that has been regularly sending drugs into this country. 8,000 pounds of cocaine were confiscated in Florida last November. That's $1.4 billion in one shipment traced to the Honduras. And Mr. Jorge Osha, a defendant in the Christic Institute suit, was driving a Porsche belonging to one of the Honduran officers, attaché of the Honduran military team, when he was arrested in Colombia, and then he was released. He's a defendant, but I doubt if he'll come to Miami to stand trial with the Christic suit. And Honduras has been a major league drug dealer. Just it parallels the case of Miami. This comes out of the Miami Herald. It parallels the case out of Panama, rather. And this is a long article on Honduran military chief and drug trade. And next week or in a few weeks, I'll go into, and I promise, the links of Oliver North to one of the top officials of Honduras and a large drug dealer. He's in jail in Florida for, he had $10 million in narcotics money to pay somebody to kill the current president of Honduras, just as we're trying to get rid of Noriega. And the name of the game is keep the monopoly on the drug traffic, and if somebody's prices are too high, get rid of them and off them. Now, Miami Herald had another long article. General Gorman, and he's no flaming liberal, retired General Paul Gorman, the former commander of the U.S. Army Southern Command, said Monday that an excessive preoccupation with Soviet expansionism has kept the Reagan administration from carrying out the full-fledged flight against international drug smugglers. This is Miami Herald, February the 7th, 1988. The title, General says U.S. ignored Noriega and drugs and the massive drug trafficking. And again, the Honduras parallels it. The former Southern commander said he repeatedly urged the Department of Defense to pay more attention to the rising power of drug cartels in the region. And the deputy director of defense under Carlucci now is Richard Armitage, who was named by Kung Sa and the persons in Burma as being high up partner in the drug traffic. The Defense Department Deputy Director Armitage can't be touched any more than Michael Aquino can be touched with the Presidio case. And General Gorman is saying that the high-ranking officials in the military are involved with this activity. He said, I happen to believe that many of the threats to our security arise from factors over which the Soviets exert very little control, Gorman said. And he said Noriega was described by U.S. officials as a longtime CIA collaborator. Many legislatures suspect that the Reagan administration failed to move against Noriega until recently because senior CIA and national security officials were receiving help from the Panamanian general, and the general in return was supplying Nicaragua Contra rebels. Gorman said he was unaware of the efforts of Oliver North to enlist Noriega in a secret plan, shipping weapons from Panama to El Salvador. These people work on a need to know, and as I said before, the pipeline matter was not to be told to the State Department or the CIA. But he goes on in this long article and tells about Eastern Airlines and pilot Gerald Loeb telling about traveling narcotics between Miami and Panama Eastern Airlines. And Mr. Borman, one of the prominent astronauts, was the president of Eastern Airlines when it was up to his ears in narcotics traffic. And so we give these people some hollow expectations, just as the type of Jimmy Swaggers get from the religious followers. And yet the airline that Mr. Borman ran, Eastern Airline, was notoriously linked to drug traffic. And the pilots talk about the drug traffic pouring into the United States. And as I say, long article in the Boston Globe and then the San Jose Mercury on how the probe of Oliver North, the network, was divided up. And a nice article in San Francisco Chronicle, prosecutor who found North's secrets. And once in a while, there are some good people who do find the secrets. And this story is February the 20th, 1988. A young prosecutor in Miami stumbled onto Oliver North's secret Nicaraguan arms supply network 8 months before it burst into public view. He was stymied by his superiors when he tried to get the case to the grand jury. Jeffrey Feldman, an assistant U.S. attorney, said that he had a sketchy view of the plans to murder U.S. ambassador in Costa Rica, Louis Tams. And when he read that, he turned white. And when he saw North's name at the top of the chart, heading the supply operation. And this, of course, his awareness and education began when the Christic Institute suit was filed. And he and two FBI people went to Costa Rica, and he said, I was treated like an enemy when I talked about that. And he showed his information to Ambassador Louis Tams, a key link in North's network. We all thought we were onto something, said Kevin Currier, one of the FBI agents, throughout the spring and summer of 1986. Feldman asked his boss, U.S. Attorney Leon Kellner, in Miami to allow the case to go. But Feldman, who at the time did not realize the full significance of what he discovered, said he was stalled for months by Kellner and other top assistants. Feldman said he was told by Kellner August 29th that politics are involved. That was in August 29th, and then October the 5th, when Hassan was landed and mentioned Gomez Rodriguez and Bush's office, that's when the case blew open. But they were sitting on it, and this is a windfall for the Christic Institute in the last 3 weeks, there's been enough material to assure that they're going to win their lawsuit for the drug trafficking, the assassination plots, and so forth. There are enough people coming forward now and telling how the original investigation was stopped. He said that when he went to Costa Rica and went to see Bob Hall, an American whose farm was used for the Contras, the ambassador himself turned white. They were all turning white down there. And Feldman said the only thing what he said when I pulled out the chart of how the operation goes was get Fernandez. Joe Fernandez, then a CIA station chief in Costa Rica, knew that he was dealing with three people, Feldman and two FBI agents who had only seen the top of the iceberg, that he knew what was going on, and they tried to rip the credibility of the people who were there. Fernandez said to the U.S. attorney, deputy attorney, do you know who Oliver North is? Let me tell you who Oliver North is. He's the person that introduced me to the president of the United States last week, the CIA station chief down in Costa Rica. And immediately after the meeting with Tams on March 31st, Fernandez called North to tell him that the FBI were in Costa Rica and they were asking questions about the weapons network. And Feldman revealed that Hall called him in Costa Rica and said he wanted to give the prosecutor information, but 2 days later, Hall then changed his mind. And then they all sat on the material, and the rest is history. Well, that is the story of these drug dealers, and there will be a lot more coming out. Unfortunately, there's not a lot in our papers, but I do take enough papers to get these and share them with you. And I'll continue doing that because this story will be unfolding for a long, long time. I want to conclude the program by saying the previous hour, World Watchers, has been made possible in part by Aries Arts, in the heart of Capitola Village, serving Santa Cruz's growing consciousness for over 20 years. My name is Mae Bressel, and I'll be back with you in about 3 minutes to continue the second part of World Watchers.